Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And my guest today is Nicole Bell, and probably many of you have heard of her. She is the CEO of Galaxy Diagnostics. She's the best-selling, award-winning memoir, What Lurks in the Woods. She's joining us today. We're going to have her share her husband's journey that tragically did not end well. But I think that it's important to know both sides of things, right? I talk so many times with my guests about conquering Lyme and being on the other side. And unfortunately, there's not always those wonderful ending stories. And so it's going to be tough to hear, but I'm so grateful she's going to be vulnerable with us and share all the stuff. And then also, I'm excited to have her talk about Galaxy Diagnostics, right? So many of my listeners, you've heard me talk over the years about Armin Labs and Igenics, and those are the labs that I know that I trust. And I've heard so many positive things about Galaxy over the years. And so I'm excited to have firsthand all of the knowledge and information that they're bringing. They're certainly, we're going to talk about the challenges of diagnostics, accessibility, treatment, just all the stuff. So I'm anxious to dive into this. Nicole, thank you so much for joining me. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for all that you do to raise awareness about, you know, tick-borne diseases.
Yeah, well, it's those personal journeys or journeys of our loved ones that kind of put us down this path. So I appreciate you as well. So if you mind, I'd kind of like to just dive in first about your husband and the journey that he went through and that you and your family all went through with him.
Yeah. So my husband, Russ, he, you know, he was a brilliant engineer, and we had met actually in a startup. We used to work together, and we moved to North Carolina back in, 2006, and had a young family. He kind of stepped back from his professional career to help be Mr. Mom, right, and take care of the kids. And he was like, it's your time to have your career, and I'll support you. And he was just an amazing person. But all of a sudden, he really started to change. So his mood became, he became depressed, he became anxious, he became irritable and exhibited bouts of rage. You know, things that I was like, okay, maybe Mr. Mom isn't working out. Maybe you should go back to work, right?
Like, it's a tough job, right?
It's a tough job, right? And so there was always something holding him back, and it was just never, and it never made sense to me. And we went to marriage counseling, and that didn't really help. And then eventually I started realizing that there were cognitive issues happening. So he was, again, a brilliant engineer, computer science, electrical engineering. And all of a sudden he couldn't remember the, you know, security code to our house alarm. He couldn't remember the time to pick up the kids from daycare, even though it was the same time every day. And that was when I realized that something was seriously wrong, right? This was not just an emotional distress or an unhappiness. This was something there was some pathology going on. And so I started researching, and, you know, Lyme disease came up as one of the top things in terms of like brain fog. And it was top of my radar screen because he was an avid outdoorsman. He grew up in the South. He was a hunter. He did all the landscaping at the house. He'd had multiple tick exposures, had lived in lots of endemic areas. And of course, everywhere is endemic these days anyways.
Right.
And we went to our first integrative physician. And I didn't start with the traditional medicine. I kind of knew I wanted to go someplace where they could really dig deep. And they ran a whole battery of tests, and everything came back normal, right? And they ran his Lyme disease test. He tested negative on his Western blot. Only one of five bands was positive, and I didn't know much better at the time. They never tested for any other tick-borne diseases. And, you know, then she basically referred us to a neurologist. She said, well, most of his symptoms are cognitive, so you should go to a neurologist. And to make a long story short, you know, he had an intensive cognitive assessment and followed by some imaging, and his PET scan, or, you know, one of the scans that they took of his brain, showed that he had late stage Alzheimer's disease. And so that ended up being the diagnosis, was Alzheimer's. And then we were kind of put in that bucket. And, you know, I raged against the machine for a while because it didn't make any sense, right? Like, he was very healthy. He was still young. He was older than I was, but he was still young. He was in his late 50s at the time. And he had no genetic predisposition to Alzheimer's. He was declining really fast, and it just didn't make any sense. And I went from neurologist to neurologist, and we got, you know, the standard runaround, and they would just wanted to basically give him ineffective medications and kind of track his decline. And I ended up, after I had pretty much given up because I wasn't getting anywhere, and all of the test results came back again, quote unquote, normal. And then my brother called me because my sister-in-law had been diagnosed with Lyme and Bartonella and Babesia, and he's a doctor, mm-hmm. and he started researching, and he was like, you know, I really think this is what's going on with Russ. He said, I'm reading all sorts of things about cognitive decline and links to Alzheimer's disease, and there's lots of preliminary research. And so he encouraged me to get him retested. And that was when I figured out that not only did he have Lyme disease, but he also had Bartonella and Babesia. And so that's kind of when our tick-borne disease journey began.
Wow. And, you know, we get misdiagnosed all the time. And I'm really glad that you put faith in your brother when he called to, you know, share this information, because, you know, I do a lot on social media, and I, you know, see people's journeys that they go down, and I'm constantly reaching out to them, trying to explain to them that I'm not saying for sure, but I'm not a doctor, I'm not anything, but the amount of time I've spent in the Lyme community, it really sounds like you might have Lyme disease. And, you know, of course their response is, no, I've been tested for it. And then, you know, we come back and say, yes, but the testing isn't accurate. And it's really hard to, I get it, right? We have a loved one or ourselves that are struggling with our health, and people are throwing things and pulling you every different way. And you come to a point where you're like, oh, you know, it's just so much. I'm just going to take this diagnosis. So I get it, but I'm super happy that, you know, your brother found that information and shared it, and you were open-minded to get to where you were able to finally get the diagnosis.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, I'm an engineer by training. And so we're trained as engineers, right, to look for root causes. And so the whole thing just didn't make any sense. I'm like, how can my husband's brain be systematically destroying itself? And there's no reason, right? Like, yeah. He's not high risk for Alzheimer's disease. It's not in his family. He does not have the genes, every single gene that was out there, I had him tested for, at least that we know of. And it didn't sit well with me. But unfortunately, that's not the way traditional medicine is set up. You know, root cause is not their forte. It's really more symptoms-based. And it was a challenge.
Yeah.
It was a challenge.
Yeah. Oh, and we're going to kind of dive deeper into that as well. And I'm excited mm-hmm. about that. So then you mentioned already that you kind of went, you know, the non-traditional holistic route. And so where did you go from here?
Yeah. So I found a Lyme literate physician in my area. So I'm in North Carolina, and there was someone in the Raleigh area that I ended up engaging with. We did, you know, a whole course of, we did really detailed broad spectrum antibiotics for a long period of time. And, you know, because I think he was so sick that, you know, I think we decided to go with that route. But also did herbal therapies. We did, you know, IV interventions. We did even stem cell therapies. I mean, I was trying everything that had a scientific foundation to it, because he was really in a difficult spot, right? Like I said, he was diagnosed with late stage Alzheimer's disease and really, really struggling. So, but as you said, you know, at the beginning, unfortunately, the story didn't end well. I mean, he had multiple co-infections deep in his brain. And so he did respond to treatment. A lot of his symptoms went away, but the cognitive piece never did. And so after about 18 months of treatment, he, with lots of ups and downs, he was just becoming too, he was a full-blown Alzheimer's patient at that point. And I was still trying to keep my job and manage two young, I mean, my children were 5 and 8. They were really young.
Wow.
And so I was, you know, you mentioned being a caregiver, right? I was imploding. I've done a lot of difficult things in my life, but that was by far the hardest thing I've ever done, was being a caregiver. And he was not an easy patient. and so it was...
For one, he's a male, right?
Yes. And it's just, you know, I've seen, you know, I ended up placing him in a resident care facility in 2019. And then, you know, he passed in 2022. And I saw lots of different patients in the resident care facility. You know, some get super kind and gentle and others get belligerent. Unfortunately, Russ was more on the belligerent side and it was just really difficult. And so his journey did not end well. It was complicated by the fact that COVID was right in the middle of all of it. And so we weren't able to see him. It was a really difficult period.
Wow. That's just heartbreaking. You know, and I have been around, both my grandmothers passed away from Alzheimer's. And so I'm very familiar with, you know, how they act. And one was super sweet and one was very angry. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm sure it must have just been heartbreaking to watch this man, right? The father of your children, the love of your life, just turn into somebody that he's not. And he has no control over it. And you're trying to figure it out. And oh, I'm so sorry. It's just heartbreaking.
Yeah. It really was enlightening for me, you know, how much biochemistry controls who you are. Right. Yeah. And I think that a lot of people think that we have self-control, that we can, you know, it's all just try harder or do the things. And it's like, no, there is a serious change in the chemistry of your brain that impacts so many things. And it really can change who you are and how you act. And, you know, from, you know, minute to minute, you know, like some supplements he had really favorable reactions to, and he would be really nasty. And then I would, you know, give him like ketones for his brain, and he would just, then he would be really sweet and told me he loved me. And it was like, wow, this is crazy. Like just completely crazy. I never would have understood it if I hadn't seen it firsthand. And then, and also the link to mental health, right? Because he was hallucinating. He thought people were in our woods trying to kill us with machine guns. And, you know, this was a completely rational engineering, you know, based mindset that I'd always known. And all of a sudden he was thinking people were, you know, out in the bushes and the trees trying to kill us. And it's like, it's given me such an empathy for mental health and for all of the people that have to struggle with, and also a different way of looking at it, and that maybe some of these cases are actually treatable and solvable with the right interventions.
Yeah, for sure. And so you mentioned the woods. Was that kind of how you got the book title, What Lurks in the Woods?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a dual, you know, reason. One, because of ticks, and, you know, that became, the woods became not my friend anymore. You know, we live in a beautiful wooded area, and all of a sudden I was paranoid, right, of anything. The dogs would go outside and come back in, and I was paranoid they were going to bring ticks in, and they did. I have a chapter in the story where I, you know, my daughter came down from breakfast, and, you know, she hugged the dog. She came down for breakfast. She hugged the dog, and then there was a tick running across her torso, and so that was obviously one. And then the other was, yes, he was hallucinating and he thought people were in the woods trying to kill us. And it became kind of an ominous place for us, which I've since reclaimed, but not easily.
Right. So with that being said, can we kind of talk about that a little bit? You know, the whole, I say that going through Lyme disease is kind of like peeling an onion. There's so many layers. It's not just killing. It's not just dissolving. So much of it is mental health, our mindset, the emotional side of things. I talk a lot about it almost being like a grieving process, right? Mm-hmm. We're grieving who we once were. We're grieving maybe the finances that are no longer available because we've spent them all. We're grieving relationships, friendships, so many things. And so a lot of people end up with PTSD, right? Mm-hmm. It, through this journey, we learn so many different things. That, and I truly think that my journey was such a blessing to me. But I didn't know it at the time, right? It's the, all the things that we learn during and then afterwards, we kind of put them together. And I know that many, many people still struggle with being paranoid, being petrified. Maybe paranoid isn't the great word, right? But awareness is key. You know, mm-hmm. we know what tics are. We know what to look for. We need to obviously be, you know, on alert, right? But we don't want to be scared of it. We don't want to live in a bubble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the people that used to run and hike, they just don't do that anymore. So I know you said it was not easy. It was challenging. Can you kind of maybe talk a little bit about that and maybe give the listeners some tips on what worked for you that kind of got you through that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing I did, which I talked about in the book, is was trying to reclaim my yard, right? So
start small.
Yeah. Reclaim my yard. I wanted to feel safe in my own home, right? And so we had a fenced-in area where the dogs would run, but right outside of that, there was a lot of like wild woods, right? And there were trees, but there was a lot of underbrush. And so I had all that, all the underbrush kind of surrounding the house completely cleared out. So we kept all the trees, but I kind of cleared out all of the low foliage and got that all out of there. And then I, you know, started putting out little permethrin tubes. I don't know if you've seen those. They're actually little mm-hmm. cotton filled tubes. It came out of research at Harvard. So little tubes, and they're filled with cotton that's coated with permethrin. And so a lot of people don't realize that the life cycle of ticks actually starts, you know, the young ticks actually feed on mice. And so these tubes, what happens is it's meant for the mice to go take this cotton and they put it in their burrows, and then the mice get covered in permethrin, and that actually kills the nymphal ticks. And so it can kind of start it at the beginning of the cycle. And you can get them on Amazon. They're called tick control tubes. And I put those all over my yard.
Wow. See, I never heard of this. So this is amazing.
Yep. You put those out. I put them out twice a year and kind of do that. I also have somebody that comes and sprays kind of an eco-friendly, you know, repellent that's good for mosquitoes and for ticks. And that was great. When I did that, I wasn't noticing any ticks on the dogs. I felt safe, you know, that I could at least have my family be outside in our space and not be paranoid. Because before that, I was taking all of the ticks I would find on the dog. I was putting them in a container. I had them all in the freezer. Like I was just, it was happening a lot. And, and so
and that's a lot.
It's a lot. When you just feel like every blanket, everything, you know, we love our dogs, right? A lot of people have dogs in their beds and so forth, and you just don't know what's going to happen. So that was the first thing. And then of course, you know, then there's prevention, right? So we whenever we go outside, not just when we go in the woods, but whenever we go outside, spray. I've taught my kids, they chastised me for it because I'm so crazy about bug spray. So, you know, just making sure. And then tick checks. And when you get home, my son golfs now. And so I'm like, okay, when you get home, you go upstairs, you strip down, you take a shower, the clothes go in the washing machine and then the dryer, and just being really good about prevention so that we feel like we have some control over what's mm-hmm. going to happen. And then obviously being aware of symptoms, right? You know, I think a lot of people think that, you know, it's okay to be fatigued. It's okay to have these symptoms until they get really, really bad. But I've just developed an appreciation to really listen to my body and to understand and not take things for granted. And I think if we had done that with Russ, we would have caught it a lot earlier than we did. Mm-hmm. It had to get to a tipping point that was really bad before we were aware that there was a problem. And now I'm much more in tune with things that we should be looking for.
Yeah. Gosh, those are some really great tips. And yeah, you know, we can't live in fear, but be smart, right? Mm-hmm. We gather so many tools for our toolbox when we go through this journey, either ourselves or with a loved one. And I think those are the key things, you know, just awareness, prevention, and protect yourselves and yep. not go, you know, yeah, I'm sure it was rough for your children. Oh my gosh, mom, bug spray, you know, but do the things right and then go with it. Yep. You know, in your mind, you can't prevent everything in life from happening, right? We cannot live in these bubbles, but it sounds like you came up with some really great solutions to give you that safe space, right? You're doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. And then yes, at the end of the day, we know our bodies, right? Mm-hmm. These doctors don't. And just because you're a young mom with kids, that does not mean that your fatigue may be okay, right? That's what we get told so many times is you have a stressful job, you're a mom, you know, and I'm not saying that that doesn't always, you know, play a role in it, but listen to your body. We have mm-hmm. to be our own advocates. We just have to be.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, a dear friend of mine really gave me some great advice. And he said, you know, worry is like frenetic energy that you can't really do anything about. It's just worry, right? If you reframe it as awareness, right? I worry that I might get bit by a tick, right? Mm-hmm. There's not much you can do about that. But if I'm aware that I could get bit by a tick, then it's like, well, how do I turn that awareness into action? And what am I going to do about it? And so just that little reframing for me was like, okay, I'm aware that this is a threat. Now, what can I do about it? And just reclaiming that power when you feel, like you said, powerless and the PTSD, I mean, it's real. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that, but then trying to reframe it in a way that's productive was what was really helpful for me.
Yeah, no, that was some great advice. Thanks for sharing that. And, you know, I have a friend within the Lyme community and we talk about triggers. Right. Mm-hmm. You see things that are triggers. And he says, instead of it being, you know, like a red flag trigger, stop and turn that trigger into teaching. What is it teaching me? What do I need to learn from this? And, you know, again, mindset plays a huge role in this journey. And then even afterwards. And these are tools that maybe we never would have thought we needed in our lives until we go through something like this.
Yep. So true.
So, okay, well, let's talk about what you do, your passion, your mission at Galaxy Diagnostics and just the problems you've seen. You know, we touched a little bit about it with Russ and the problems that we're having, right? Mm-hmm. So many of us are kind of new to the Lyme journey. Some of us have been down this road for many years. And I keep assuring everybody out there that so many changes have been taking place. We are making so much progress I got my diagnosis finally in 2015. So I guess 10 years ago, things were so much different back then. We still have so much further to go, right? And so many other things to accomplish, but things have changed. And so I'd like to just maybe start with just testing, you know, where it kind of was then and what you provide at your place and just talk about the improvements of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we went to the doctor, we got what's considered the standard of care test, right? Which is, they actually ran just the Western blot. So the standard of care is a standard two-tier, which is kind of two antibody-based tests in series. And we just had the Western blot, which is, there's lots of ways I could talk about that, but that's really just looking for antibodies and the immune system's response to the pathogens. And so the challenge in Russ's case is that, you know, when you're chronically ill, you may not be, your immune system's not functioning very well, right? Your immune system is suppressed. And so your antibody titers or levels can actually be suppressed. And that was the case for him, is that, you know, he wasn't producing a lot of antibodies at all. Nonetheless, antibodies for Lyme disease. And so that's one of the challenges that you see in chronic illness. It's also antibodies are also not fantastic in the early stages of the disease, right? Because it takes a while for your immune system to respond. So it's about 4 to 6 weeks for your antibodies to go up. And so you're missing the window when treatment is most effective, right? As soon as you get that tick bite, you go to the doctor, you want to say, you know, I'm not feeling well, I'm having some issues, I want to get tested, and it tests negative. And a lot of people won't treat you in traditional medicine. And so, and that's because it's waiting for your immune response, which takes some time to develop. And some people don't ever develop that immune response. So research in rhesus monkeys actually shows that some animals, which are very similar to humans, just don't develop an immune response at all, right? So some do, and they have different antibodies that go, but some animals have different types of antibodies to different proteins, some have none. And so it's an indirect method of doing a diagnosis, right? It's waiting on the effect of your immune system to basically tell whether or not the pathogen's present. And that's a challenge because it's a step away from the actual answer, right? And it's relying upon your immune system acting properly, which isn't the case in a lot of situations. And so that's where we still are, unfortunately. I mean, the standard two-tier test was established in 1994. And we now have the modified two-tier, which is a little bit different and a little bit better, but it's still missing about 50% of cases, right? And that's not okay.
That's not okay. So we're talking about the Western blot.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it not necessarily that it's the specific lab that your, you know, primary care doctor is using? It's just mainly the type of test.
I think it's both. So
okay.
There's been lots of data that's shown that lab to lab antibody testing or the Western blot can vary. And it can be, and if you look at some of the studies, some labs are in the 20%, some labs are in the 60 to 70%. None of them are at 100%, right? Because that's the problem with antibody testing is that it's relying upon your immune response, which is hugely variable and complicated. And so, but yes, you can get variability from lab to lab. You can also have a lot of variability host to host or human to human, right? And that's the challenge with it. And so one of the things that we do across all other infectious diseases, right, is we don't do these indirect methodologies. We do direct tests. So the analogy that I like to give is just think about COVID, right? If you want to know if you have COVID, you don't get an antibody test for COVID, right? You get a PCR test or you get an antigen test. And both of those are looking for direct evidence of the pathogen. So in a PCR test, you're looking for the DNA or the actual genetic material of the pathogen itself. Or in an antigen test, you're looking for things that are specific to the pathogen, like proteins or other things that are released by the pathogen, but are specific to it. So you know that if you test positive for that antigen, that the pathogen is, you know, is there and has been present. And so the challenge is that in tick-borne disease and in Lyme disease, these tests don't exist. They're not sensitive enough. And the reason is because these pathogens, if you look at the research, and this is something that as an engineer, I kind of had to dive into to really truly understand. If you look at the research, you know, these pathogens are masters at evading the immune system. They're what are considered stealth pathogens, right? They hide, they evade the immune system, they actively suppress the immune system by kind of manipulating it to, you know, they release, cytokines and different things that actually suppress the host immune response. And so as a result, it's really difficult to, one, get that accurate immune response and know that that's what you're looking for. But two, because they're in low abundance and they don't like to circulate freely in the blood, it's really difficult to capture it in a test tube. And that's what you need in order to get an accurate test result. So at the end of the day, direct methods like PCR and antigen testing just haven't been sensitive enough. So if you run it, you'd never get a positive because they're just not sensitive enough. And so that's the problem that needs to be solved. And when I looked around at all the different testing, on the other end of my journey, Russ had passed away or was in resident care actually at the time. And I was like, okay, this is a problem that needs to be solved. Let's see what everybody's doing. So I kind of researched all the labs that were out there and all the research that had been published. And I came across, the approach that Galaxy's using. So that it was actually based upon research at NC State for a lot of our direct DNA detection, and then also research at George Mason University for our antigen test results. And it's really all about everything that we try and do is how do we lower the limits of detection to make direct detection, a viable option? Because that's what you want, right? You want to understand, yeah, is the pathogen present or not? And is it, is it something where we need to do some active treatment because the pathogen's there? Because the other challenge with antibody testing is once you've had Lyme disease, you're going to have antibodies. And so if you've been treated and you don't feel well still, is that because you still have Borrelia, Lyme persisting in your body, which has been shown in the research to be a thing? Or is it because you have another co-infection? Or is it because you have so much immune dysregulation caused by the pathogen? Like, what's the right way to take somebody who's not responding well to treatment and then get them better? And so that the direct detection is key because it's like, well, which pathogens are still on board? And understanding that is critical. And so that was what drew me to Galaxy, is because to me, that was the problem that needed to be solved. And they had literally had decades of research trying to, to do just that, to lower the limits of detection, published research that, was showing clinical utility in high-risk patient groups and really trying to accurately solve that problem.
Wow. I love learning all this stuff, right? And your background, your history, like, you're the perfect person to kind of dive into what you did. Because I think that is why, it took so much time for us to even be validated that there is a chronic Lyme disease, right? Not just, yeah, Lyme disease, but because of the way you're explaining the Western blot test us, our immune response, we have chronic Lyme before we even know we have Lyme. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem because, if you get a tick bite and you have, most of us don't get the bullseye rash, but if you do, jump on board with those antibiotics, which I've always said or am thought to believe 6 to 8 weeks is kind of the cycle of the initial antibiotics to try to get it out. And then, you can live your life Lyme-free if it's caught. And that's part of the problem is, like what you said, we're not catching it fast enough. And so, yep, I love the ideas of all these new, studies and ways that we know we have this problem, right? So that's great. I love what you're doing. So where has there been more improvement since then?
Yeah. So, what we're doing now, excuse me, I was just about to cough. So our Lyme test, is really a unique approach. So it's essentially, instead of looking for antibody-based testing, right, it's a urine antigen test. So I mentioned that these pathogens are really good at evading the immune system. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that they do that is they actually spit off these surface proteins, right? So they kind of do that as a way to confuse the immune system. So instead of the antibodies that your body produces, instead of actually attacking the pathogen itself, it kind of goes after these free-floating proteins that it leaves behind. It's actually quite a brilliant immune evasion technique. But then what happens is these proteins actually filter through your kidneys and into your bladder and get excreted in your urine. And that's how we test. So we're looking for these proteins that are, led off by Borrelia. And then we can say, okay, it looks like Lyme, antigens are present, Lyme disease is on board. And so this is great for early stage disease because you're going to get that in the testing that we've done, the research we've done with our partners as well at George Mason, it shows up at earliest signs of symptoms, right? So much faster than you would get in an antibody response. And then it's also really good for, people who are still trying to figure out, do I have an active case of Lyme? you know, what's going on. And what we've seen is it can allow the practitioner to discern whether, you know, maybe there's still Lyme present or if it's something else that needs to be addressed. And so, and we've had lots of patients that have come in, you know, for example, a lot of women in my age group are, you know, dealing with early signs of menopause, right? Mm-hmm. And we've had multiple providers that have patients come in with a history of Lyme. There was two women that I'm thinking of. Each of them had Lyme like in college, and they went in because they felt tired. They thought it was perimenopause. They were looking for some hormone replacements and so forth. You know, but the practitioner, because that practitioner was Lyme literate, they were like, well, let me just see. You have a history of Lyme. Let's just run this urine antigen test. And sure enough, their Lyme was active. And so, you know, put them on a course of treatment, all of a sudden doing much better. Hormones are back on track. Like, these are the things that I think people don't think about. They'll listen to your body, right? And even people that have had symptoms or active infections known years ago, it's one of those things you should always be thinking about, because it's, you know, it can become reactivated, particularly with hormone changes or other assaults on your body. I know a lot of people got really sick with COVID. It's like, well, what else is on board that you might have to think about?
Yeah, no, that's so true, because many of us get a tick bite, right? And we may even have the bullseye rash, but we have no symptoms. Right. You know, so our immunity is strong, and then, you know, life goes on. You have something physical or emotional trauma, something that breaks down your immunity, and it allows those pathogens to take over your body. Yeah. Now you've got the symptoms, right? So it's a urine antigen test. Okay, this is fascinating to me, because I've never heard of a urine test for Lyme. So I love it. Yeah. And is that just kind of a baseline? Is it just testing for Lyme, or does it test for all of the other co-infections as well?
So right now it's just testing for Lyme. So our research partners at George Mason have shown that it actually will work for other pathogens as well. And so we envision going there in the future. But right now we test for other co-infections, with a blood-based test. So, I mentioned that we have a research partner at NC State. That was actually some of the founders from Galaxy were there. And really that group at NC State is pretty much responsible for putting Bartonella on the map, you know, a major contributor at least. Dr. Ed Breichwert and Dr. Ricardo Maggi, they have over 400 peer-reviewed publications in Bartonella, and really looking at not only the best ways to detect it and to see if it's present, but also linking it to certain disease states. Like, for example, they're studying the role of Bartonella in schizophrenia, in Alzheimer's, in Pan's pandas, in long COVID. You know, these are all kind of active studies, and there's good, like schizophrenia, for example, a study that they did, 65% of schizophrenia patients were DNA positive for Bartonella, you know, compared to single digit in the control group. And so, again, going back to that mental health issue, right?
Yeah.
These pathogens can play a huge role. And so we are using their technology that was developed there. We use an advanced technique called digital PCR. And I won't go into all the specifics because I can get super nerdy. But basically it's, you know, it's just it's a more sensitive technique that's really good at detecting low abundance pathogens, right? So, you know, if you think about trying to find a needle in the haystack, right? If you just take one measurement of a haystack and try and find the needle, it's going to be really hard. What this technique does is it takes that haystack and it separates it out into 20,000 piles and then looks at all of the individual haystacks and tries to find whether or not it's present. And with that, we get much better sensitivity for these low abundance pathogens. And so we have a release test for Bartonella now. And actually, in the next month, we're going to be releasing it for other co-infections. So it'll be for Babesia and also for Borrelia, because Borrelia or Lyme Borrelia is not really a bloodborne pathogen, but relapsing fever Borrelia, actually, we do find in the blood. So we like the urine antigen test for Borrelia burgdorferi and pathogens and other Borrelias related to Lyme. And then the blood-based test is really good for more relapsing fever Borrelias.
Wow, so interesting. So see, I told you, listeners, we really have come a long ways over the years, right? Still so much to go, but it sounds like you're on the right path. And, you know, when you talk about bringing all these things out about Bartonella, you know, Lyme rage is a real thing. And yes. Is it stemming from Bartonella? It kind of sounds like it is, right? It's really not in our head. It is out of our control.
Yes. And I would say from my personal experience, absolutely. Like when Russ went on when he went on rifabutin or rifampin for Bartonella, it was like game changing. And I had no respect for that pathogen until we ran out of pills one day and then all of his symptoms came raging back. And I was like, wow, what is this pill for? Because I didn't really understand. And then when I understood that it was targeted at Bartonella, I started really digging into the research on that because I didn't have an understanding, at least at the time, of how important these co-infections are. And our partners at MC State are really now doing that deep dive into Babesia. And what they're finding is that a lot of the people who are not responding well to treatment are actually suffering with undiagnosed Babesia, because that can also be a low abundance infection. And they're uncovering a lot of cases that have previously not been diagnosed with the improved technology that we're using.
Wow. There's just, it's a lot, right? There's so much. And that's, you know, why I came up with my title to this show, Lyme and Beyond, right? Because mm-hmm. it's not just the Lyme, it's all the co-infections that we're talking about. So I'm glad that they're, you know, doing more studies and more research on this, because obviously we need it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, this is just kind of a just an off the wall question that just popped into my head. But have you any thoughts on which one of these pathogens can, I don't want to say wreak more havoc on our body, but that can be more difficult to get rid of in your body?
I think it really depends on the person, right? These pathogens are so complicated. I definitely have a healthy respect for Bartonella, you know, and I think we're learning more and more about Babesia and some of the strains that are really leading to these complex chronic, you know, conditions. And, you know, I think the biggest challenge, I don't think the pathogens themselves are the problem. I think the problem is that doctors don't know which ones they're battling, right? Because they're dealing with bad testing. It's like they're trying to treat these really difficult, sneaky pathogens, and they're trying to do it blind, right? They don't know what adversary they're up against. And guess what? The treatment protocol for Borrelia is completely different from the treatment protocol for Bartonella, which is different from the treatment protocol for Babesia. And so if you don't know, and all of them have very overlapping, nonspecific symptoms, they can attack multiple body types. And so I don't necessarily think the pathogens are, you know, these nefarious things that can't be beaten. But if you don't know that they're on board and you let them take camp in your body for a while, things get really complicated. And so, you know, you have to have, again, that's why for me, it was all about the testing. Like the testing is the key. And as a person to try and dive in, and I had worked in medical diagnostics before, so it was kind of right in my, up in my alley. But for me, it still seemed like the biggest problem because, again, imagine trying to fight an adversary blindfolded, right? That's what we're asking doctors to do.
Yeah, no, and it makes perfect sense. Just part of my journey, you know, when I finally got my diagnosis 7 years into it, I was diagnosed with Borrelia, so Lyme, and then Bartonella. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, all the other little crazy things, the chronic fatigue, all of that. And I treated for 3 years and had a emotional trauma. The town I lived in burned to the ground. And so I drove through the fire for 5 hours. It re-triggered the Lyme in my body. And so I took a million steps backwards, right? And then I moved out of state away from my Lyme doctor. And I thought, well, you know, gosh, if I could just find somebody that will help me do stuff, if you have a facility for me for modalities, and I was just dumping money into things, not getting well, having mm-hmm. new random symptoms, come to find out 17 years later after my bite, Babesia came out in my body.
that was never detected before. So yeah, if you don't know what you're treating, you can't treat it properly. Makes perfect sense, right?
Yep. And I think, you know, and these pathogens can be on board. Your immune system can keep them at bay for a while. I mean, my husband was a very healthy individual, but I think he had these pathogens for over a decade, right? Yeah. And it finally got to a tipping point, and then he went into illness. And there were signs that in hindsight that I would have been an indicator if I had known. But it is difficult. And I think I always encourage people, if you have some sort of life event, again, hormone changes, stress, trauma, an illness, you know, some of these pathogens can really rear their ugly head and may have not have been a problem before.
Yeah. And like you mentioned earlier about COVID, I've had so many people, you know, the long haul COVID, not really sure it's long haul COVID because most of them are finding out that they have Lyme disease that has laid dormant in their body for years. And like you said about your husband, I believe it too, because I got bit in 2004 and had a bullseye rash. But because I was uneducated, I didn't know anything. And I didn't get sick for 4 years. So it can lay dormant in our body if our immune system is up and fighting and being active. And then once you suppress that, look out, right? The pathogens take over.
Yep.
So, okay. So with your facility, can people just come in and get testing done? Do they need to go through a practitioner? How does that work with you guys?
So you go through a practitioner, and we can help you find one in your area if that's, you know, something that's a challenge. But we do like to go through practitioners just because it is a complex disease and we want to make sure people are getting support and help. But we have tests for, like I said, our Lyme urine antigen test, and then we have our blood-based test for soon all the three Bs, right? Borrelia, Bartonella, and Babesia. And we'll be adding other pathogens as we go forward because our technology is very scalable. And so both our blood-based testing and our urine antigen testing, we plan to extend to other pathogens over time.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so with their practitioner, maybe they're not familiar with your facility. I'm assuming you're going to kind of lead them down throughout the different options of the testing, what you guys kind of recommend. And then also, yes, we're all in need of searching out good Lyme literate doctors, preferably in our area, right? Because person to person is always best. So thank you for throwing that out as well, because we can all use help in that department too.
Yeah.
And so as far as the pricing and insurance, do you use insurance? Is it something that I know that I've heard a lot of things, you know, just within the community that insurances now are reimbursing for some of these specialty labs. And so what is your experience with that?
Yeah, so we do provide super bills for patients, and so people can reimburse or it can submit for reimbursement. And we do see people, you know, depending on their plan, depending on their location, people will get, you know, partial reimbursements, generally not full reimbursements. But, you know, it really depends on the individual and what their plan is and so forth. But we have, you know, we have codes that doctors and practitioners can use, and definitely will do anything to support people getting, you know, reimbursement from their providers.
Awesome. Because, you know, we need all the help we can get, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this is where we are right now. I think longer term, the mission of the company is not just to sell tests. It's to really change the standard of care. And so we're going after FDA submission. We're going after insurance reimbursements and getting on, in network. Those are things that I think will be coming, but it's going to take a little bit of time to get there. You know, we want to get our products in the hands of the LabCorps and the Quests of the world and get them using our tests because that's where everyone gets access, right? Not just people who can afford it, not just people who can't afford it, but have to because they don't have any options, right? But everybody. And so that's the mission, and we'll get there hopefully in the next few years. But for now, we'll do what we can to help with super bills and getting, you know, people the information they need.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys are doing incredible things there, because we do. We need to have the confidence to walk into our PCP, right? We're having problems. And whether Lyme is on our radar or not, right? But to have the test available because yes. normally it goes out to Quest, right? And they don't have the testing abilities that you guys do, that you guys are providing, and to have those available to them, I truly think it could be a game changer.
Yeah, we're working it. I mean, I've got key members from both LabCorp and Quest on our scientific advisory board. We talk to them regularly. I mean, we want to solve this problem the right way.
Wow, yes. Well, I'm super grateful, and I'm sure on behalf of all the listeners, I can say it as well. I'm sorry your journey took you, or the end of your journey is what brought you through to where you are now. But oftentimes we have to go through something like this to really just light that fire in us, right? To yeah. what can I do? And so your background, your degrees that you have all kind of was in that wheelhouse. And so I'm super happy you took off and ran with it. I appreciate what you do. And I'm super thankful for you joining me today and sharing what you're doing, because I love to be able to have a list of doctor recommendations for people that reach out to me. I just like to help people navigate, you know, if anything, just lost my train of thought on my word, you know, that what you are going through is real, right?
Yes.
We need that validation is my word to yep. validate what you're going through, right? You need help in the area to find a doctor near you, the labs near you. And so you bet I'm for sure going to refer your lab out to all the people that I chat with, because it sounds like you guys are doing incredible things. You're on the right track. You know where you need to go. It just takes baby steps, right? It doesn't happen overnight, but as you've all heard today, we've made big strides, and it sounds like you guys have come a long ways in this. So I appreciate it for sure.
Oh, thank you so much. Yep. We're going to get there.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.